Hello, hello. You're very welcome to If I Were the Minister for Education, a regular podcast where I look into the world of primary education and let you know what I would do if I were the Minister for Education. This is Simon Lewis. On this week's show, I'll be continuing to explore the fiasco that isn't going away, which is set allocations as the IPPN turn on its own members. And speaking of things that won't go away, I'll be exploring the new primary curriculum, which has re-entered the news stories for I don't know how many times. And I'll be talking about how teachers will now be expected to teach languages they don't speak themselves. If you're interested in subscribing to this podcast, or if you're watching it on YouTube, you can subscribe by going to your favorite podcasting platform to subscribe, or you can go into YouTube and you can click and like and subscribe, whatever people do. Is it smash that like button? I don't know what young people say. I say that every week. Anyway, let's get on with things. And as you'll see on the screen, if you're watching on YouTube, you'll see the title on the screen, which is An Attempt to Explain Special Education in Ireland. And if I can achieve that, I will be doing very well. Because if you've been following the set allocation model story over the last number of weeks, you'll probably understand how difficult it is to understand. And it was only when I spoke to a journalist that I realized that there's a lot that we take for granted in schools. I said in my first sentence in this article I wrote on my Medium blog, that's simonmlewis.medium.com, I started off by saying, if you're a primary school teacher, these acronyms probably make complete sense to you. SENO, SET, SP, SESE, SPHE, and so on. All of these acronyms beginning with S. And they probably make a lot of sense to you, but they probably don't make a lot of sense to anyone outside of the primary education system. And when I was speaking to a journalist about the initial, initially talking to him about special education, it was amazing how confusing things got, because he didn't really understand what the difference between a special class teacher is, a special education teacher is, and what a special needs assistant is, and why there are no teaching assistants in Ireland, even though he's heard about teaching assistants, which, funnily enough, there's a college course in Ireland, if you want to look it up, hoping to train you as a teaching assistant, despite there not being a teaching assistant job in Ireland, in primary schools at least. And it got me thinking about this whole debacle about the set allocations model. And there's been so many news stories over the last couple of weeks around set allocations. Basically, just in case you are living under a rock, if you're a primary school teacher, or if you just haven't heard about the story, about a month ago, the Department of Education released their allocations to schools for special education teachers. And there was uproar because they essentially, I suppose in a nutshell, they have basically decided that all teachers are going to be decided, special education teachers are going to be decided on three criteria only. One of them is okay, it's on whether the school is in a disadvantaged area or not. But the other two, and the major criteria, about 94% of the criteria is going on your enrollment, which makes a bit of sense, but also based on literacy and numeracy scores that children would have received over the last 3 years. Now, for anyone who's involved in education, you will know that standardized tests in literacy and numeracy are not something that we take very seriously as a profession. We have to do them, but we understand their limitations. In fact, we understand them so much that we take very little heed of the results that we get, often don't correlate with how well the children are doing. They are a snapshot, essentially, on one day. But a big talking point, really, was one of the criteria that was removed from set allocations for 2024 was the complex needs variable, which accounted for about 50% of allocations given up until last year. And the removal of that meant that children with complex needs are not necessarily going to be allocated resources. And it's a huge bone of contention, so much so that Inclusion Ireland, Down Syndrome Ireland and As I Am got together to make a joint statement or a joint campaign for them to be returned. And principals around the country, teachers around the country were going absolutely nuts about this as well, because effectively what happens is that children with complex needs may not necessarily get low standardized test scores. It actually, in some ways, it's quite insulting to children with complex needs that they're basically saying, we couldn't get the data on complex needs, so we just use your literacy and numeracy scores because you're probably going to get low test results anyway because you've complex needs. it's frankly baffling, really, that this would be the case. And obviously the advocacy groups are saying that it is baffling as well that they would do this. And we were waiting for education groups to come along and say, yeah, this is ridiculous. It's bad. It's not working. And they didn't. So the National Principals Forum, who I'm involved with, sent a questionnaire or a survey to principals. And sure enough, principals were aggrieved by this and not happy about it. So we decided to do a petition joining the other campaigners that were out there. And roughly 700 principals basically signed this petition and was sent to anyone and everyone. And it's been bizarre, the outcome of this. Because not only did the Department of Education dispute the accuracy of the principles, they actually went through every single line, every single school, and so desperate and petty and pathetic that they went through every single line. Rather than actually sorting out the problem, they decided to try and undermine this petition. I always wonder, because the other three advocacy groups did exactly the same thing. They had 1,300 signatories. And I wonder if they would go through all those 1,300 signatories and basically say, oh, well, two or three of those signatures came from the same house. And oh yeah, and these, about five of them came from a different from the same school. So clear. Like, the way the Department of Education are measuring these set allocations is they have this odd thing where they think the only reason a school would be annoyed about these set allocations was because they themselves would be losing hours, not because the system is based on junk data. And I think this is what the problem is. The basically set allocations, when they were introduced in 2017, were based on five different criteria. And the five different criteria were basically set what your allocations would be. And since then, they've been manipulated, changed slightly depending on who you are, and developing schools were badly treated, and we have the data on that. But schools that were losing enrollments, in order to avoid a political kind of fallout, they kept ours. And essentially what we ended up with just junk data. And by 2024, what we have is we're using junk data and then adding further junk data. And ultimately, the allocations are meaningless, and they don't actually provide schools with what they need. And we thought, well, fair enough, the Department of Education are going to try and run this under the carpet or whatever people do. But then, in the most baffling, I've never seen this before, the principals, the IPPN, which is the principals network, have actually turned on their own members in a statement. They made a joint communication with the NAPD, and I have no idea why they're involved. They're a secondary school organisation, and this has nothing to do with secondary schools. And the NPC, they've turned on their parents. They're the National Parents Council. They basically have called the calls from advocacy groups and the National Parents Forum that it's misinformation or miscommunication or misconceptions, all the kind of bluff words that are used by organisations. It's astonishing. And you wouldn't mind if their joint communication, or they're basically essentially saying that you're all wrong, was based on any communication with their own members. But they didn't consult with any of their members. The advocacy groups had consulted with their members. They got as 1,300 signatures to a petition asking for this set allocations to be paused. And the National Principals Forum asked all schools about their opinions and got all the data and then asked for a petition. The IPPN didn't ask anyone. And to be honest with you, we don't know where this is coming from. This is a very odd situation. And it really, I think, has baffled many people involved in education. And I think everybody suspects the IPPN are generally a good organisation. They've lovely people in there. I know them. Some of them are my friends. And then they come out with this. And nobody knows why. And it's interesting. They came out with it, but didn't refer to it again. They didn't tweet it. They usually will tweet their joint communications. They didn't tweet it. They also didn't add it to their weekly newsletter that they send to newspapers. It's just a very odd and baffling kind of communication, and that nobody quite understands why. The suspicion really is that they are reliant on funding from the Department of Education. So maybe they were told that they needed to refute the calls. Look, who knows? It's a really odd situation. And one I'm sure we'll be returning to at some point, because I don't think this story is going to go away. And I'm really not quite sure what is going on there. But I just wanted to talk to you a little bit more about an article I wrote on it, because it's basically trying to defend the set allocations. Could we all be wrong is what it's called. And it goes through essentially what's been going on with the IPPN and the NAPD, and why do I think they did what they did, and why are they trying to bury the story about the Department of Education's decision to provide, use junk data, remove complex needs as a variable in order to give set allocations, and why they would defend and advise schools. The other thing I suppose I should mention is that lots and lots of people have written to the IPPN to protest their or to complain about the way they've handled the situation. And they have a template email which they're sending out to people, which advises them to go through the appeals mechanism, despite the fact that the appeals mechanism is horrendous as well. And it just surprises me that an organisation I have a lot of time for, and I've had a lot of time for, in fact I was on their board for a short time, has reduced themselves to effectively being spokespeople for the Department of Education. I don't know. I did a little graph of how many people basically contacted or gave their feedback to the National Principals Forum versus those who gave feedback to the IPPN, and you'll see the graph there, which is maybe just a bit of a joke, but quite serious too. I link in this article that you should find again on the Medium blog, I've linked the full statement there, which you might have a look at. But they have said an outrageous sort of statement to me. And they said, it's important to be clear that children with complex needs have not been excluded from the allocation of hours that schools received. They have. And I put this fallacy to bed. From 2017 to 2022, the set allocations were calculated under 5 criteria, and I list those, and then 3 criteria now, which is in, and the 2 criteria that are missing from those 5 are gender and complex needs data. The Department of Education even admitted themselves that they dropped complex needs as a criteria because they couldn't get the data from anywhere, and they decided they would increase the weighting of literacy and numeracy scores. Now, I'm spending a bit of time here because I can't understand why the IPPN have done what they've done. Is it that they're really out of touch, that they don't understand children with the complex needs can and often do score highly in literacy and numeracy tests? Because I could get it. I can get if they are out of touch. The classroom has changed so much in the last decade, and most of the principals in the offices, or most of the people in the office working for IPPN, are retired principals or haven't been in a school for quite some time. I get that. I haven't been teaching directly for about 10 years now, and I know that when I go into classrooms to take lessons, the classroom is definitely a different place than it used to be, even in the short space of time that I was there. I often say like that when I was teaching, last time I taught, I probably made 2 phone calls a year to parents about issues in the classroom. I know that that teachers are making 2 phone calls a day in terms of things that go on in classrooms. So maybe they're so long outside of the classroom that they aren't, they actually don't understand what's going on in classrooms. I don't know. But I suppose what really, do you know the people, I think young people again, they're with triggering language. But if you want to trigger me, there's plenty of ways you can do so. You can call your school inclusive or very inclusive. Or you can, when you talk about special education needs, you can say pupils with the greatest levels of need should now have access to the greatest level of support. This really annoys me, and it actually annoys anyone working in a school, because you'll hear that statement used by people in the NCSE, people in NEPS, people in the Department of Education, and now our own representative body are using this really awful line that pupils with the greatest level of need should have access to the greatest level of support. If you want to translate that sentence into English, if you want to translate it away from spin into English, into normal English language, that sentence means that children with needs, what you're saying here is that schools will choose what children do not get access to support. So all your children with support, that have support needs, will not receive a support. Only the ones with the greatest level of need. So in other words, children with the least level of needs will get, despite having needs, will not have any support. That's all it's saying. Essentially, when people say that to me, I always ask them, so you're asking me to choose which children who have needs don't get support? And they laugh because they don't care. And isn't it awful to see your representative body using that sort of language? It's awful. It's really awful. And they go on to explain to us why we're wrong, and using baffling language. And there's a little word in here I love, and I have to tell you about it. I'll read it. Given that the revised allocations model is now underpinned by more accurate data provided by schools, it is hoped that a quantum of hours allocated to schools will better enable children with additional and complex need to achieve and thrive in their mainstream settings. A quantum of what? Quantum? It's such a baffling word. Why would they? What person uses the word quantum in everyday language? Nobody is the answer to that question. But they've used three times in their sentence. So I decided I'd check out what does quantum mean. So I looked up a few dictionaries and I found my favorite one, which is it's the smallest amount. Basically, it's a science word. It's used in physics, really, and chemistry and stuff like that. It's used in science, not used in allocating resources to children in schools. But it's actually the smallest amount of, or a unit of something, especially energy. I like to condense that to the smallest amount of energy. And that could equally define the level of representation that the IPPN are giving to their members in this case. But I just want to back up a little bit because that word quantum is very distracting and maybe deliberately. What I wanted to look at here was this thing about the revised allocations being underpinned by more accurate data. So what is this accurate data? And they both use this, the IPPN and the Department of Education, aping the same language, accurate data. The accurate data is, and I'll tell you what they are, it's enrollment figures and standardized scores. That's it. There is no other data being used, and those two pieces of data do not provide accurate needs for a school. And they just, it's just annoying, really, to hear your representative body behaving like this. And I don't really understand. And it's not just me. It's not just the National Principals Forum. It's not just the advocacy groups. It's not just us. There's plenty of people. And I'm just going to go through. I just pasted three tweets or Twitter threads or X threads from other principals or people involved in education. And it just goes to show, this is just people who are online and unable to comment. I've spoken to several principals who just are shocked. People are just baffled and nobody can quite understand it. Essentially, what can we do? I just don't know what we can do about it. And I suppose the irony, and I will conclude with this thought, is that on the day after that the IPPN released this statement, basically throwing their members under the bus, they also shared a really good article from their vice CEO, their deputy CEO, which has been published in the Education Yearbook, a fantastic journal, titled The Health and Wellbeing of Irish School Leaders. And this article essentially shows that burnout, stress, sleeping troubles, depressive symptoms, somatic stress, and cognitive stress have all increased in principals since 2015 all the way up to 2022. And all of the conclusions state that it's getting worse and worse. And in fact, we know that principals of primary schools are suffering certain forms of stress and burnout twice the normal rate of most other jobs. And isn't it ironic that when 700 or more of their members make a public cry for help, their response was to tell them that we were wrong. Let's move on. It's the new primary curriculum. And do you know what? When you've got a new primary curriculum which teaches all the new subjects of all, let's reduce to a headline, sex. Yeah, it's all about sex education to be taught at an earlier age and under new primary curriculum. That's from the Irish Times. And Today FM also headlined with sex. Sex sells. And sex education in Ireland. And the maddening thing, I suppose, is that really that's the headline. And it's quite frustrating because the actual truth of that story is that puberty will be taught in third and fourth class rather than in fifth and sixth class. And do you know why? Because children in third and fourth class experience puberty. Probably a good idea for them to know what's going on there. That's the only change. And that's the headline. There's much, much bigger, bigger stories, really. And they were actually well developed and well spoken about by Carl O'Brien the next day when he discussed what was actually changing. And it's a really good article. I'd recommend you look at it. It'll be in the show notes. And we'll be talking about learning new foreign languages. STEM will be a subject in the curriculum, and also a lot more on well-being. It's a lot to squeeze, he says, and absolutely that's true. So he decided, that is funny, so much more to squeeze. So we'll be reducing religious instruction by half an hour a week so we can fit in all this extra stuff. And I'm not going to go on about religion, the role of religion in schools. There's actually a really good letter from David Graham in the Irish Times, which is in my Feedly link, where he talks about what the impact of that will be, i.e. none. And in fact, I would argue that it cements the role of faith formation and religious segregation in schools for another generation. But as I said, I don't really want to go on too much about it. As I said, Carl O'Brien talks about the different flashpoints. He talks about the sex education thing, and in fairness to him, he does clarify that it really is just puberty. The focus on foreign languages, a weird one, this one. I think foreign languages are going to be taught by class teachers, whether or not they speak a foreign language, which is an interesting one. I'm going to be brushing up on my Slovakian and my Lithuanian, and probably going to try and learn some Portuguese as well. I don't know. Look, I'm really unsure about how this is going to work. I've been asking people online about this. In Scotland, apparently, this is fine. I spoke to a teacher in Scotland who's been teaching Italian for the last few years, despite not speaking Italian, and he said it works out. So look, I'm going to, despite being a bit cynical about it, I am going to obviously find out a little bit more, because I don't actually know how to teach a foreign language if you don't speak that foreign language. I guess if it's happening in Scotland, it must be possible. And it may be happening in other countries as well. I don't know. So look, that's one change. The other changes that are happening to the curriculum, which aren't being widely reported, particularly in this article or others, is technology is a new subject in the curriculum. And I have argued for years that I would not like to see technology as a subject. I like it as a methodology, but it is going to be part of the STEM subject. Not a lot known about it yet, so maybe that's why, and there will be consultations on it. We don't know whether we're going to be teaching children computational thinking, which might be better than teaching them coding. They're not the same thing. But I do know that a small news story that happened was that schools are all going to be giving coding kits by something called Tech Tips, or is it ICT Tips? Sorry, a project in Trinity College. So I don't know if it's anything to give us a heads up about. If we're going to be teaching coding to children, it's yet another foreign language, I'd suggest, that we'll be expected to teach, having no knowledge of the subject or of the language ourselves. Other things coming into the new curriculum, I suppose it says we've only 7 subjects, but in reality, we're adding lots of new subjects into the curriculum. As I said, the well-being thing, which has been reduced down to sex education, there's a lot more going on in the well-being thing. And it's actually a good... People would probably accuse me of being negative all the time. But actually, I think I don't like the word well-being, but for the purposes of calling subject something, I'll take well-being. I can't think of a better word, so I suppose I'll bow to that. But there's some really good stuff. We're allowing, I suppose, what well-being had basically is SPHE, and that was given half an hour a week, and we were expected to cover everything from internet safety to sex education to substance abuse prevention to staying safe to anything and everything that was to do with basically stuff that parents used to do with their children, we are now covering in schools. That's probably a cynical thing to say, because that's, and not fair. I'm sorry for saying that. I think a lot of the stuff that probably could be covered in many, that is being covered in many houses, maybe not being covered in houses, I think we do have to do in schools. So having a lot more time to do that is a good thing. There's talk of PE being increased, the time for physical education being increased. I think it's a missed opportunity, this new curriculum. I've called it a tweak rather than a revolution. And I don't know if people agree with me on that. But I think there could have been much braver ways of doing this curriculum. I promised I wouldn't talk about the religion. That was one example where that could have been very brave, but it isn't. And it's disappointing to see that they're just merely allowing another generation carry on with faith formation, albeit for half an hour less per week or 6 minutes per day less. It's a disappointment. But look, I suppose the primary curriculum will be discussed for the next few years as consultations are ongoing. It's curious to me that despite all the consultations over the last number of years, that very little has changed since they've announced it. It's a shame. I think if people really listened to the consultations that were going on, we'd have a very different curriculum coming on than the one that was announced 3 or 4 years ago. It seems very similar. But look, I'm sure I'll be returning to that very soon. You're probably wondering why I said at the start, I wasn't looking through bins. If you are on the podcast, you're not going to have the benefit of this. But if you're looking on YouTube, and please come along to YouTube to have a look at this, then I'm going to show you a picture of a principal. Should I try and look like him? Yeah, he's like a younger version of me with much cooler glasses, actually. This is a principal in Doncaster in England. He's actually a secondary school as well, so it definitely isn't me. I'm a primary school principal. But a secondary school is monitoring families' bins, cars and posts to crack down on unauthorised pupils' absences. This is an amazing story from the UK. Astrea Academy Woodfields in Doncaster, in South Yorkshire. Doncaster is a little town outside Sheffield, my beloved Sheffield. And it's checking driveways, boiler flues, to see if families are actually home or away on holiday. And the principal, David Scales, is saying they're being conducted out of safety concerns for absent children. I'm just finding this amazing. What an amazing story. And I hope we're not going down this route over here in Ireland. In fact, I think probably doing the opposite. We're not taking much care at all. I think we're on the other side of the spectrum. The UK are obsessed with student absenteeism to the point of fining parents if they don't send their children to school. In Ireland, where I was, I think if you might remember from the last episode, I was on Drive Time. I think it was on Drive Time, where Sarah McInerney and Cormac, can't remember his surname, sorry, Cormac, we're having a gentle kind of teasing of me about parents taking their children out on the holidays, and sure, go on, it's all right, isn't it? Yeah, we're very much the opposite end of the spectrum. I hope we never end up in a situation we are searching through the bins and looking at gas boilers to make sure children are coming to school. On a serious note, though, with it, while we don't want to go down the stick of the UK when it comes to absenteeism, we do have a chronic problem with children's absenteeism. And the reason for that is that we have such a shortage of educational welfare officers, and we really need to get that back in action. So that if children are missing school for unnecessary reasons, we do need to be tackling that, because the impact of not coming to school, obviously, is great. And we do not want to go through a laissez-faire approach to not coming to school. We are not a babysitting service. I feel a lot of the time I'm asked to go on the radio is when there's education stories about babysitting rather than about education. And I do think we need to take education a little bit more seriously. Now, there's my lecture for you. Anyway, that is really all I have to talk about this week. We've hit the 30-minute mark. I've loads and loads of other stories that have hit the news on my Feely channel. You can have a look at that. But go over to onshaw.net, where you'll see this and lots more articles, mainly around set allocations this time round. But there's also a few bits on technology. I have a little series, a little article there on how to make a comic strip using Canva, a really great tool. And I've also a few other articles that might be of use to you. So that's it for me from this week. Thanks so much for watching or listening, depending where you're what you're doing. And as I said, please feel free to subscribe if you enjoy this. And please share this podcast with your friends and colleagues and encourage them to subscribe by going to onshaw.net/subscribe. Anyway, enough from me. Thanks so much for listening or watching. All the very best. Bye-bye.